You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
While he was studying police socialization for his PhD at Harvard, Peter Moskos put his academic career on hold to become a cop. He spent just over a year policing the high-crime streets of Baltimore, the city depicted in the HBO series The Wire. Mr. Moskos, who is now an assistant professor at City University of New York's John Jay College of Criminal Justice, recounts his time in uniform in Cop in the Hood, My Year Policing Baltimore's Eastern District. It's published by Princeton University Press, and it is my pleasure to welcome Mr. Moskos to the show today. Hello.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
So why did you decide to drop out of school for a time and become a cop?
I didn't actually drop out of school. Technically, I was a full-time graduate student at Harvard all the while I was a police officer. Taking time away would be better, but was part of...
Could you apply any credits, like an internship?
No, I had all that done. It was just a matter at that point of research and writing my dissertation.
How close were you to getting your PhD?
Well, I quit the police force in 2001, and I got my dissertation in 2004, so it took me longer to write the thing than it took me to research it.
So you saw this as really just part of your research?
When you're a police officer, you are a police officer, so it's not that it's just part of my research, but that was when I was working. I would go home afterwards, take notes, and start writing things down. So I was always aware that my goal was to finish school, and I was encouraged to do that by many of the police officers I worked with.
Oh, they were happy to have an academic in their midst.
No, of course. They're not happy, but they were surprisingly good about it. There was certainly suspicion when I started as to, you know, who I was and what my motivations were and so on. But I found the acceptance I got from my fellow officers as a liberal grad student, the acceptance I got from police was in many ways far greater than I felt the acceptance from academics is of conservative police officers.
Were you looking for something specific to apply to your studies?
No. There's a fancy term for that called grounded theory. But basically, I had no idea what to expect going into the police department. So I just sort of went with the punches and ended up writing about where I was assigned.
Well, you were on the force 7 years ago. Has it taken you all this time to write about it in a book?
The short answer is yes, unfortunately.
You probably wrote the dissertation. Is this the popular version of the dissertation?
It's the same subject to some level, but it's all – the material is all new. I would not want anybody to have to read my dissertation or any dissertation for that matter. But the material is based on the same experiences and the same police officers in Baltimore.
Most cops have told me that when it comes to the public's image of cops, the TV usually gets it wrong. And the show that they have often cited as the most accurate was Barney Miller, which was a sitcom.
That was slightly before my time. I know we're all supposed to be safe out there, but Barney Miller, I don't remember. I mean, of course, I barely remember Starsky and Hutch, which I'm sure is not realistic.
But you were in Baltimore. Was The Wire pretty close?
Yes. It was filming when I was there. Season one might have started right before I left. I don't quite remember. I'd say that The Wire is about 80% realistic, which is not 100%, but it is so much more than any other police show out there.
What expectations did you have about being a cop when you decided to go into it?
Again, I went in somewhat, I mean, not a blank slate out of any sense of objectivity, just a blank slate out of ignorance. I don't come from a police family. I did not have friends who were police officers.
Most of the cops did?
A lot did. Certainly were more sort of sympathetic to the blue-collar police lifestyle. I mean, both my parents were teachers, so I come from an academic background. So in that sense, the city was new for me. I didn't know the city. I didn't know the police department. I certainly was a bit more afraid of seeing a culture of corruption and brutality because TV and movies do portray cops negatively. And even The Wire, which portrays them realistic, there's always the subplot of corruption in the police department.
And you didn't see much of that?
I didn't see any of it. I know it's out there, but it is not part of the culture of the police department. Officers get caught every now and then, so they're certainly corrupt officers, but I don't think they last too long.
Well, you weren't from Baltimore. Would it have helped if you had grown up in the town? Would you have been able to deal with some of the things that you face better?
I actually felt I had an advantage because I lived in Baltimore City, and most of the police officers did not. There's no residency requirement. most of the police officers, especially the white police officers, had no dealings with Baltimore City before working there. And I do think it's helpful for police officers to have lived or live in the city they're working, because it does give you knowledge of the way things work.
I'm talking with Peter Moskos, M-O-S-K-O-S. His book, Cop in the Hood, A Year Policing Baltimore's Eastern District, published by Princeton University Press. So you went to police academy. Did that prepare you for real police work?
No. It's 6 months. You do learn some useful skills. I never touched a gun before, so you learn how to shoot. You learn how to drive a bit more aggressively if you have to. I enjoyed the law classes. That's the ACAD academic in me. But it's in large part, it's a wasted 6 months. You're paying police officers their full wages. Granted, it's not a lot, but still, you have this great opportunity to teach them something, and there's very little connection with the actual policing world. You learn policing when you hit the street. I don't think any officer leaves the academy feeling confident they know what to do.
Well, is that because they're not teaching you the sociological aspects of policing?
I mean, I'm biased because that's my background, but I certainly felt that could have helped, especially because police officers do realize it. They may not couch it in those terms, but you are dealing with sociology and you're dealing with race relations that have a history that precede the age of a lot of police officers. It's good for police officers to know these things, to understand why some non-criminals may not like the police.
Do you think that police academies in other major cities might be doing a better job?
I do think they do a better job in New York City. I think there's a bit more effort. There are connections with John Jay College, which I think help. But in large part, I think the Baltimore experience is relatively typical.
Once you completed your training, you were assigned to the midnight shift in Baltimore's Eastern District. Tell us about the Eastern.
Yeah, one of the fears of my book is people will read it and think worse thoughts than they might already about Baltimore City in the Eastern District. It is a wonderful city.
The best crab cakes I've ever had.
Oh, yeah. I just had some steamed crabs the other night, in fact, and thought of Baltimore. That being said, I prefer living in New York City. Baltimore has problems that every other city does, but it tends to have a bit more of them. And the Eastern District is hardcore ghetto. A lot of people object to that term, especially people who live there who aren't ghetto. But if you accept that there is such a thing, that's the Eastern District. It's 99-point-something percent minority. The murder rate is just off the hook. Public drug dealing on many of the corners and just abandonment, blights, and vacant buildings.
And the wire was about West Baltimore. So Baltimore has a kind of a sandwich?
The East and West are pretty similar. It's actually most of the Western scenes were filmed in the Eastern District. So what you see in the wire is the Eastern, but it fictionally takes place in the Western District.
Wouldn't it have made more sense to have experienced cops in the highest crime districts, not cops who are new to the job?
You need a bit of both because younger cops have a bit more energy, which helps. But you do want it's the shame is that is where policing takes the most skill, and you do want the best and the most experienced cops in those areas. But the working conditions are bad. It's not a good place to live. It's not a good place to work. So police officers want to get out of that district generally as soon as they can.
What was the moment when you first began to think, I'm not at Harvard anymore?
I think I had that moment in the neighborhood bar in Somerville. Really just arriving in Baltimore, what surprised me, I knew the city from John Waters' movies, and I realized that he wasn't lying. He may be condensing, but he's not exaggerating. It is a very eccentric city, and there's a lot of charm in that. But it's not like the cities I was used to living in. I grew up in Chicago. I lived in Boston and now New York.
Well, if the police academy didn't prepare you, does most of the learning to be a cop come from being on the job? How do cops learn the problem solving and interpersonal skills they need to be good officers if they're not learning them at the academy?
Some of that you learn by trial and error, which is unfortunate because there's an error part of trial and error. You're close to your squad mates and your colleagues. You see how other officers do it. But some police officers will always be better at handling certain types of situations and other police officers and others. So you can often complement each other very well in how you work. But it comes from experience, and it does come from that on-the-job training. That being said, you do go back often to to what you learned in the academy. You know, you do trust, your instincts often come from training, especially in dangerous situations or use of force. That's where the academy does help.
But in your case, you knew throughout that this was not a permanent situation for you. Was there ever a time when you stopped being a grad student who was being a cop?
I think you can do both. I don't think they're mutually exclusive. I did have some trouble. My original plan wasn't to become a police officer when I went to Baltimore, so I had some trouble back at Harvard with my professors who originally weren't too keen on the idea of me actually being a police officer.
They didn't think it was a good idea to actually experience what you were going to become expert at?
It's hard to say. Partly no. Partly there just may be some old-fashioned class snobbery. Partly it wasn't my plan. I think they felt I was trying to pull the bait and switch on them, which wasn't the case. But a lot of I always planned on leaving the police department. I knew I could stay, which I ended up quitting when I got civil service protection that I felt was appropriate. Once they couldn't fire me easily, I quit. But that being said, a lot of police officers I worked with, they also had other plans, whether it was to finish school or work for a better-paying department or, you know, go to the FBI. The fact, and I heard this from a lot of my colleagues, you know, if you're using this as a stepping stone to something better, more power to you.
Is there a burnout factor?
Absolutely. I think if I'd stayed there, I'd be burnt out. I could have, you know, done 20 years, but I would have been, I think, as bitter and burnt out as the next officer after about, you know, 5 or 10 years.
Do you think it helps you as a teacher that you've had this experience?
Oh, yes.
And what about your students? Do they listen to you differently than they might somebody else who just knows this from having read a lot of books?
So they tell me, but they might just be buttering me up before I give them their grades. But it does give me a certain amount of street cred in the classroom because I do teach a fair number of active New York police officers and a lot of New York police officer wannabes. And I think I don't think you need to be a cop to teach about it, but I can't imagine teaching the way I do without having been a police officer and learning from that experience.
When you compared notes with the other rookie officers, were they willing to speak candidly with you?
Yeah, partly because if you think about it, generally, if you're with somebody for 8 hours, and we generally patrol alone without partners, but you're still talking to, you know, someone in the next car in the parking lot, and the midnight shift slows down usually at, you know, 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. It's just a long time to be with people. So conversation does, as in any place, become very personal and candid, and you just, you know, there's only so long you can keep your guard up.
What were the reasons that they had joined the police department?
Primarily because it was seen as a good job. There was a bit of a difference between.
A good job? I mean, did they like the danger? Was that part of it? Or is this socially upwardly mobile?
For some police officers, I gave out the only part I was would advertise my academic status was I gave out questionnaires to my academy class before and after, and when I left the force, there was a big difference in motivations between white and black police officers. That the black police officers, especially the women African Americans, it was seen as a stable job. In my academy class, I think there were 8, I don't remember exactly, they were all single mothers, and they said, well, where else can I get a job that gives me the benefits and the security, especially with all I have is a high school diploma or a GED in New York. You need 2 years of college credit. In Baltimore, you don't. The white police officers, there was much more of a young sort of male macho, yeah, they're going to pay me to carry a gun. And, you know, I've seen the TV show Cops, and I love it. And there was that more excitement. The problem with that, when you become a police officer for the excitement, there are moments of excitement, but they're usually terrifying at the time. It can be a very boring job, and if you can't pace yourself, you're going to get burnt out.
Is that why there's a lot of gallows humor?
The gallows humor just comes from you see a lot of human suffering and misery. No one calls you because, you know, their kid graduated from high school or, you know, they just got a promotion. I mean, everything you go to is because somebody lost control of a situation or someone's hurt. So there is a lot of gallows humor, and I'm personally quite fond of gallows humor, but it does help you deal with the seeing what you see.
Different when the officers you're with are women or men?
Most of my squad was male, so I
you had the same sort of jokes that you have in military.
Yeah. I don't have the military experience, but I think that's true. Women have just as good gallows humor as men do. Maybe the sexual talk is a bit more frank when it's just men around, but I don't think there's a huge difference in attitude.
My guest is Peter Muskos, who's assistant professor of law, police science, and criminal justice administration at the City University of New York's John Jay College of Criminal Justice. And he's written about his experiences as a cop in Baltimore called Cop in the Hood. It's published by Princeton University Press. We will continue our conversation after this. We're back with Peter Maskos, who's written a book called Cop in the Hood, My Year Policing Baltimore's Eastern District. It's published by Princeton University Press. So what were the conditions that you found most people in the Eastern District living in?
There's a difference between the conditions that I found people living in and most people in the Eastern District. Police officers don't see a random cross-section of a community. But the Eastern District that I saw was one of poverty and despair and a culture of violence and just a community really racked by the drug trade and by the war on drugs. But it was very depressing as a police officer because you go into people's houses and you see, you know, four kids on a dirty mattress with mice running over them and buckets of urine in the corner. And you know, you don't want to say they don't have a chance. But, I mean, boy, it's tough growing up in that environment. And you know, people blame teachers later, but, you know, the teachers only have them for 8 hours a day. There's some really rough living conditions.
Well, you said you weren't familiar much with Baltimore before you actually joined the force, but were you surprised to find such squalor?
I was, and it's a level of abandonment that, I mean, the flight from that district, it between 1990 and 2000, it lost 30% of its population. So you just see the sort of decaying infrastructure of what used to be a city, and it used to be a stable community. What also surprised me was...
I mean, the minute somebody had any money, they got out?
Oh, evidently. You know, I couldn't talk to the people who left. There were people who stayed and said, you know, look, this is my neighborhood and I'm not leaving, which is an admirable and a position to take, and I was proud of them. But, man, if I were them, I would have left.
But I'm assuming that the great majority of people you met were decent, hardworking people or would have wanted to have been if they'd had jobs.
Hardworking, no. Yes, but many were involved in illegal working. I mean, the drug trade is kind of what you do as a police officer in that district. There is not much legitimate economy there. Johns Hopkins Hospital is in that area, and they employ, they're, you know, one of the largest, I think after the city, the largest employer in Baltimore. But there is the economy is not good. There is, and the same people hanging on the same corners every day. You know, I don't want to be too insulting, but I do have a tough time having police the area calling the people that I dealt with as a police officer decent people by and large. You know, we didn't get along well.
But they saw you as the enemy almost immediately, didn't they?
Yeah, and I mean, but I was. I mean, my job was to lock them up. If I were them, I wouldn't have liked me either. There's a certain truce. I mean, you know, cops luckily don't get ambushed very often. You know, it's not that every time you pull up on a corner, there's active hostility. You know, they don't want to deal with you, and to some extent, you don't want to deal with them. So they're sort of, it's ritualized a bit, the interactions. You know, you pull up, they walk around the block, you go away, they come back.
Well, how much of your job was devoted to busting up the drug corners?
A lot. Between that and domestic violence, what a lot of that was, you know, drug-related too. If you have a broad definition of drug-related, the majority. But I always want to point out it's not just the drugs. The problem is the drug trade. It's the war on drugs. The problem wasn't so much of people getting high and causing problems, though there's a bit of that with crackheads. The problem is violent. It's public drug dealing. And if they just sold drugs inside or quietly to their friends and colleagues and coworkers, you know, there wouldn't be a problem. It's the yelling and the shouting and then the breaking of bottles and the fights on the street and what, you know, often ends up with gunshots.
How old are the people who are selling these drugs?
Oh, generally I'd say 15 to 25 would be the average age range on a corner.
In The Wire, there was this premise in season 4 where one rogue police major decided to move all of the drug activity in his district to a few rundown blocks where the trade could go on without interference. Do you think that kind of decriminalization of drugs would actually work?
I think drugs should be legalized.
Although, the mayor of Baltimore was voted out of office because he said he thought marijuana should be decriminalized.
Yeah, Curtis Schmoke, I was surprised actually going there how disliked he was by everybody in the city and how well-respected he was by everybody outside of the city. The important thing about drugs is we have to regulate the drug trade. What was shown in The Wire, which was also part of the 20% that wasn't realistic of the show, but that block of Amsterdam, I did police that block. If you take the train and you can see it on the left right before you go in that tunnel before the Baltimore and Penn Station, I don't want drugs to be unregulated. Like, the problem is today they're unregulated. Anybody can sell drugs. Anybody can buy drugs. I want to see a system more like tobacco or alcohol that we're with extensive government regulation controlling the distribution. I don't know how to cure drug addiction, and there will always be addiction. But at least people don't have to kill each other buying and selling the stuff, and they don't have to die of overdoses. I mean, the mortality stats in the Eastern District are embarrassing as part of a rich civilized society.
Well, do you think that the policing had any impact on the drug trade? You suggest they just went around the corner and came back after you left.
In the grand scheme, no. In the sort of the block by block level, you could have an impact. And not being a fan of the war on drugs, I sort of asked myself, am I going to have a problem policing the war on drugs? And the answer was I didn't, because I approached it as a quality of life issue. I said, if I worked on this block and I had to get up at 8 a.m. and go to work, a lot of people in that neighborhood might get up at 4 or 5 a.m. to go to work, what would I want me to do? And my answer was, keep the block quiet so I can sleep. And a lot of times that involved arresting drug dealers. So you could have an impact on a specific block. It takes a lot of work, though. But when you arrest somebody, there's a supply and demand issue. Someone's always there. They're there to take their place. There are plenty of hungry kids in Baltimore who want both the money, even though it's often not that much, and the glamour of dealing drugs.
You're right that arrests are mostly ways to assert authority. So it has less about trying to stop criminal activity?
Well, arguably, a police authority does prevent criminal activity. I'm not quite that cynical. But now I'm going to get even more cynical and say the primary purpose of arrest was, from the police officer perspective, was to get court overtime pay. In New York, it's called collars for dollars. And we don't use that term in Baltimore, but it's the same concept. When you arrest somebody, you get paid, either for processing the person after the shift. In Baltimore, it's more when you go to court. You're guaranteed 2 hours of pay in Baltimore. It's a bit more here in New York City.
Was there emphasis on from higher-ups on getting more arrests?
There wasn't pressure. There was no quota to make arrests. But in the police world, arrests are good, and the more arrests, the better. So you're never going to – there's no such thing as a bad arrest. They're better arrests. They're great arrests. But any arrest is good. It's all part of how it's called productivity statistics, the stats, and those do matter in the police world.
How much discretion can the cops use when they're determining whether someone has broken the law?
For minor crimes, a tremendous amount of discretion. That's one of the things I go into in Cop in the Hood, my book. In my squad, over one officer over the course of half a year arrested 50 or over 50 people, and another officer arrested 4 people. We're policing the same area in the same time. Everything is constant except the police officer.
I guess he didn't want the overtime.
Exactly. He didn't want to go to court. He didn't want the commute. For serious crimes, you don't have a lot of discretion. If someone's bleeding and there's a person with a knife, says, I cut him, you're going to lock him up. For felony arrests, there's much less discretion. But for the low-level misdemeanor arrests, for low-level drug possession, and there's also the all-purpose arrests. In Baltimore, it's loitering, and in New York City, it's disorderly conduct. Those are the charges that police officers use when they want to lock you up for whatever reason.
My guest is Peter Moskos, M-O-S-K-O-S. His book, Cop in the Hood, My Year Policing Baltimore's Eastern District, published by Princeton University Press. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Did you and the other officers establish positive relationships with people in the community?
Some.
How do you think you were viewed?
Those members of the community, wonderfully. Despite a general hostility towards police officers from a lot of the criminals in the district, there's a lot of love for police officers, too, because people live there, and they don't want to get bothered by criminals any more than anyone else does. So it's not that the whole community hates the police. I would say it's very split. But there's a strong conservative and religious conservative streak running through the African American community. So I personally, I was once accused by a police officer of being fascinated with the ghetto, and I said, "Well, I am. I mean, it's a fascinating community." So I would make a point of going into stores or going into churches on Sunday mornings, and I loved doing that. And I was always greeted with open arms and feelings of love, at least in the churches.
And that cop could be totally disassociated from the the area that he worked in. What did most of your fellow cops believe caused the social problems in the Eastern District?
Liberals and Hillary Clinton.
Really?
Yeah, she was picked out by name.
Did she actually go to Baltimore and say, I want to put these drug dealers on this corner?
No, I couldn't figure out why she was picked on so much. I guess it was, yeah, but she was named. But liberal policies were blamed for the failure, and I disagree with that. But I do take their opinion more seriously because they work there. And if you don't live or work there, you don't see the fact that when government checks come out, the you know, big three being welfare and Social Security and disability, and all come out towards the end of the month, the drug markets boom. So they say, look, those are our tax dollars buying drugs. Of course, police officers don't see people buying groceries for their kids with those checks. But there is some – it's not that the police officers are crazy by any means. There's something in the culture that needs change. It's not all economic, so that's part of it.
You write about the failures of reactive policing, car-based patrol. What's wrong with that? And do you think now with cutbacks on car patrols in many places because of fuel prices that police will become more efficient?
I hope so. I car patrol is one of my pet, and that's what I did, mind you, but it's one of my pet peeves of policing.
Drove around the streets and looked for something to happen.
But you can't see as much from a car. You can't hear from a car. I mean, New York is a city of walkers, so you know how much more aware you are when you're walking down the street than if you're in a cab. It's the same thing for police officers. Cars also serve as a way intentionally to separate yourself from the community. You know, if stinky, crazy people come up to you, it's nice to be able to put on the lights and drive away. But that's, you know, as a police officer, your job is to deal with situations like that. The problem is in the department, foot patrol is seen as punishment or something for rookies. And there's a culture that does not reward foot patrol, and that should change. And if it takes high gas prices, that would be great. I have my own idea. I call it policing green. I have a blog for the book, copinthehood.com, and I explain it a bit there. My idea is give police officers the option of the money that they don't burn in gas for their shift. So if you give them $20 or $30 a shift to walk foot, and it's the police officer's choice. That's a nice bottom-up way to change culture. I've asked police officers in my class, and everyone says they would do it, at least when it's not raining. But that's fine. When it's raining, they can drive. Everyone would win, and the city would save money from car maintenance and upkeep.
Five officers were killed in the line of duty during your brief tenure on the force. That seems like a lot.
It was a bad 2 years. It was a lot, but it is a dangerous job.
Shoots somebody and the person turns out to be unarmed, are you more sympathetic than I might be?
Yes, I am more. I think I am more sympathetic because I've been in places where you see guns. I never had to fire my gun on duty, but I was on the street for a grand total of 14 months after 6 months in the academy. If I was there longer, I have no doubt I would. I mean, many of my colleagues were shot. The book's dedicated to died on duty and in a car crash responding to help an officer. There is no shortage of guns in the Eastern District or in American cities in general, and police officers have to deal with that. And yes, police officers are trained and they know the danger when they go into it. But when I'm going to work, my first obligation is to go home.
Do you think that if we change the way we approach the war on drugs, that we would see fewer weapons out on the streets?
Yeah, because the problem with drug prohibition is you can't go to court to settle your dispute. So you need intimidation and force and guns. So much of the violence is directly or indirectly related to the drug trade. And by indirectly, I mean from the culture that comes from the drug trade. That's about violence and conspicuous consumption and showing off for your friends. But so much of it has to do with that. I mean, to me, the amazing thing is why we just accept the war on drugs, and I know many of us don't, but I mean by we as a country and as lawmakers, it clearly doesn't work, and yet we refuse to talk about any alternatives.
Well, some critics say anyway that the war on drugs has morphed into a war on poor African Americans.
Wasn't the intention originally, but to a large extent it has. I mean, in the area where I work, there are 45,000 people, almost all African Americans. Other 20,000 arrests every year. It is a scale of lockups that is sort of incomprehensible. I mean, it's not that half the district's getting arrested because there are lots of repeat customers, but it's still a good chunk of the population's getting arrested every year. And that's part of what keeps the economy down. I mean, as a business, you're not going to invest. Who wants to open up a business in that type of environment?
Have you kept in touch with the people you worked with there? Have things improved since you left the force?
Well, the gallows humor in me says, yeah, because they tore down a bunch of the district. A huge chunk by Hopkins Hospital is down for urban renewal. We'll see how that works out. But no, everyone says things are getting worse. But cops always say that. And I mean, things have been getting worse since 1845 when, you know, the first police department happened. But no, there isn't any talk of things having gotten better.
If anything, the argument might be that with the creation of police forces, things got worse.
Well, I'm pro-police.
Do you miss it at all, ever?
Sometimes. As I say in my book, teaching is a better job. The hours are better. I enjoy the classroom. The pay is better. I get summers off, and nobody shoots at me. So you really can't compare the two. But I miss the people I worked with. I like the camaraderie. I like going to the bar in the morning after work and drinking with them. And I liked eating crab cakes.
There are also people who will tell you that having worked in a war zone, whether as soldiers or as reporters, there's a certain adrenaline addictive thing that happens. Does that happen with cops as well?
There are adrenaline rushes, but again, I suppose like a soldier in a war zone, it's usually around such a period of danger that you don't really enjoy it at the time. But adrenaline is a powerful drug. As a police officer, because you are a trained professional, you see a lot in people you're chasing. It's amazing what people can do after, you know, crashing a car at 40 miles an hour and jumping over barbed wire. And like, how do they do that?
I thought that was only in the movies.
No, it happens. Like when, you know, when cops crash at 5 miles an hour, they get serious injuries. We have bad luck, but it's amazing what criminals can get away with.
Peter Maskos is Assistant Professor of Law, Police Science, and Criminal Justice Administration at the City University of New York's John Jay College of Criminal Justice. He's written a book called Cop in the Hood, My Year Policing Baltimore's Eastern District, published by Princeton University Press. Thank you so much for being with us.
No, it's a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to WNYC On Demand. Please check out the other programs at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This is a free service made available by our listeners. Become a member of WNYC today.